Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Unfortunately, you answered most of my questions about all the green weeds that are growing in the front yard. But I do have the last question of that topic for me was going to be, is it too early to dethatch right now and put down the growing green and possibly some molasses? This is a Bermuda lawn, and of course it's still brown.
Well, dethatching is the biggest waste of time in the world. Dethatching is something that people that use the synthetic fertilizers, when you use those high nitrogen synthetic products, they're killing off the microbes that decompose and break down the thatch. If you're on an organic program with a good organic fertilizer, don't worry about thatch. It is decomposing. It is putting nutrients back into the ground. It is causing no problem whatsoever. So if you mean by that a low mowing, on Bermuda especially, I think you could go ahead and do that. Did you say your yard's Bermuda or St. Augustine?
Bermuda.
Okay. I think you're fine to go ahead and do that because Bermuda is so cold hardy. But do not go out and rent one of these so-called dethatchers that kind of rips things up. Those do a whole lot more damage than good, and they are totally unnecessary. If you feel like you have a buildup that could be a problem, just spray it down with some molasses. Speed up the decomposition. But I think you're okay to go ahead and mow it down. We still may get some more cold. We could easily still have another frost or two. But your Bermuda's not going to suffer that much if we do. It's such a tough grass. And I would either mow low and then put the fertilizer down, or put the fertilizer down and mow low. Probably would it be even better, because when you have those clippings on top of the fertilizer, you're activating it and getting the microbes working even faster. So I'm going to cut your work in half, and that you don't have to do a really thorough dethatching. But whenever you've got the time and energy, or if you've got a teenage son that needs some good activity, or daughter.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Get them out there and put them to work. It's certainly time to be doing it.
Great, thank you. My next question, I just have two more questions. Let's go to the backyard. We don't have anything there except what is naturally growing, and of course those are going to be weeds. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to put down a Bermuda because we have the kids that are going to be putting some high traffic in that yard, but
sure.
We don't have full sun. We have a smattering of open area, but mostly it's the 33-foot tall oaks and everything.
Yep.
I'm wondering what grass would you recommend? I've been looking at zoysia because we need a shade tolerant as well.
Okay. And zoysia is not shade tolerant. I mean, it may survive, but it's never going to be pretty. But zoysia, one of its claims to fame is it is a slower growing grass, so it doesn't have to be mowed as often. All well and good, but if it's a slower growing grass, it does not stand up to foot traffic nearly as well. So I'm afraid St. Augustine's going to be your only choice. That's not a bad thing. Just don't plant more than you need to. Some of those shadier areas, you might want to think about putting in a tough ground cover that takes about a fourth as much water. Develop a good, strong play area for kids and dogs and, other active little feet. But if we're out in full sun, Tif Bermuda, the golf course grass, that's what I'd be going for. But it's going to disappoint you in the shade in a sunny area, go out and buy the sod. You can't put it down from seed. But in a shadier area, look at Palmetto, look at Del Mar, look at one of the good shade-tolerant St. Augustines. The other thing that will make St. Augustine a good choice is it never has chiggers in it. And those of us that grew up rolling around in the grass learn pretty quickly what chiggers are. And you're always going to have chiggers in Bermuda or zoysia. You'll never have them in St. Augustine. So here's another good reason to choose a good St. Augustine. I just don't want to see wall-to-wall grass. Nobody really ought to be trying to make it look like an old-fashioned park. Plant the grass where you need grass for activities and go with a lower water-using plant or even just a mulched area. I mean, mulch is good and soft, and it's a great thing for kids to play on. I mean, if you've got little ones that you can have a swing set or something like that, it's going to get an unbelievable amount of foot traffic. Mulch is free. You can go out to the brush dump or wherever, or you can buy a better quality mulch without spending much money at all, and it's going to be a lot less frustration. It's going to be totally safe for your kids and not going to look bad either.
Okay, thanks. And then my last question is, we've planted a number of Texas sumac trees in the yard, in the front yard. This is where that full sun area is.
Okay.
One has survived. We did this about 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Almost every other one of them has eventually browned up and died.
We're talking about the flame sumac, the one that gets the good fall color?
I can't remember.
Yeah, that's so the only sumac.
It's huge. It's got the green, and it will occasionally have the little blooms.
Okay. I'm not sure. I don't really know a sumac that is a tree. We have two sumacs that do well here. One of them is a big green shrub, small leaf, we call evergreen sumac. And then there is a beautiful tree. It makes a small tree, not a big tree, but it is known for its fall color. And
might be that one. Okay. It's growing wide rather than tall.
Yeah, that it probably is. How often do you water?
We water about once a week. Yep. We've had a really good program set up through saws. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything else in those beds continues to do well.
Yep.
except the sumac, and just one of them does what is fine.
You're killing them with water. That okay. Sumac, once it's established, wants to be watered once a month. Nothing kills sumac faster than wet feet. And Mother Nature is doing wonderful things for the oak trees, the elm trees, the pecan trees. And the sumacs are suffering from this excess of water. And once you get them planted and established, I love sumacs. They are some of our best fall color out there. But they just don't mix well with other plants that require more water because they want it dry, 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 in which case they just thrive. You're killing them with kindness.
Okay. Thanks so much, Bob. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.
All right.
Bye. All right, back to gardening and back to the phone lines. It's going to be Steve and Barbara, Todd and Kay, and Steve's up first. Let's see, I think I might have hit the wrong one there. Let's try this. Good morning, Steve.
Bob.
Good morning.
I bought some liquid molasses.
Okay.
Can I run that through one of those garden sprayers? It's got the dial on the top, 1 tablespoon, 2 tablespoons.
That's a great question. Here's how I would handle that. It may be a little thick to go through the sprayer. If you, let's say you want to put it out at the rate of 1 tablespoon per gallon, and you want to set that dial at 1 tablespoon per gallon, but it clogs a little bit, it doesn't go through. Here's what you do. You dilute that molasses 50-50. Instead of putting straight molasses in the bottle, you put half water, half molasses, and then you set it for 2 tablespoons per gallon, and then you're getting exactly the amount. You're actually getting 1 tablespoon per gallon because you diluted it half and half with water. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
If it's still too concentrated to go through your sprayer, make it 3 parts water to 1 part molasses. Set the sprayer for 4 tablespoons per gallon. And what is actually coming out is 1 tablespoon per gallon of water because you've diluted it down. That way your molasses is always going to be thin enough to go through the sprayer with no problems at all.
My yard is TIF 419. When I'm spraying that, do I just give it a quick spray, or am I just going to
that depends. It, yeah, that depends on how much time you've got and how much molasses you have got. Your molasses is going to do a bunch of different things for you. When you're actually spraying it on the dead blades of the TIF 419 or the green blades during the growing season, you're increasing the microbial activity on the actual grass blade. In the case of a dead blade of grass, you're going to help it break down and decompose faster. In the case of a live blade of grass, you're going to build up a layer, a defensive layer of microbes on that leaf that's going to, you know, turn away fungus problems and insects and things like that. So when you spray it on the grass, a light spraying, you're helping the grass. When you spray it on heavily enough to kind of soak into the soil, then you're stimulating probably, when what they tell us, maybe 15,000 different kinds of beneficial microbes in the soil, maybe even more than that. So put it on as thickly and as heavily as you have time to do. A very light spraying is going to do you some good. A thorough, deep spraying is going to do even better. I think probably the compromise to make is, you know, do that light spraying once a week, once every 2 weeks, and then maybe once every month to 6 weeks, take the time to put it on more heavily, and you get the best of both worlds that way. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Have another question or couple.
Yeah, sure.
On that TIF 419, I set my lawnmower on mulch.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, it's a lot easier than bagging it.
Yeah.
If I bag
it,
I take it to my mom's place and give it to the cows. They just kind of look at it like they don't want it.
Well,
it's okay.
When it's wintertime, they want it. When they've got other green grass around, they're not interested.
Exactly.
I'm with you there. I would never bag it. I'm always going to leave it down. Tell me this. Do you mow your TIF at a high level, or do you mow it fairly low? Okay.
If I mow it very high, and so the first year I lived here, when I mowed it and I mulched it, it seemed like it was just killing my grass. It was just dying. And so last year I bagged it, and I took it all, threw it out to the cows. Sometimes they would touch it, sometimes they wouldn't.
Right.
And it seemed to do a lot better that way. But it's a lot more work. I sure don't like bagging it. But
well, the molasses is going to help you solve that problem. And also, of course, be sure you're staying organic with your fertilizer to keep those microbes going. And this is a part you're not going to want to hear, but mow more often. Because when you mow irregularly and you generate a whole bunch of grass clippings, it's going to have the tendency to shade out the light, and it's going to do more. I don't want to really call it smothering, but that's a little bit of what it does. When you mow lightly, I mean, if you look at these, at whether they're using it on golf courses, they're mowing it once a day. They're out there with their mowers at 6 o'clock every morning cutting it. And the other thing I will tell you about having TIF is if you can't do it yourself, spend the money every 6 months to sharpen the blades on your mower, because it is so thick that it has to have a very sharp blade. If you were mowing it low, I was going to give you the bad news. You got to trade in your rotary mower for what they call a reel, R-E-E-L, reel type mower that's a lot more expensive. And that's how these guys that want to have a golf green in their front yard, that's how they go about doing it. In your case, you're just fine using your rotary mower since you're mowing it high. But I want those blades on that mower super, super sharp. And, you know, take it over to my friends over at C&L Mower, Willie and Jay over there. And Willie will sharpen it for you at a very reasonable price. But the price that you're going to pay for having, you know, having TIF Bermuda is that you really need to keep those blades sharp to do a good job with it. When you do that, you're going to get a good clean cut on it. You're going to get clippings, so you're going to break down more quickly. And, you know, hopefully you can raise up some kids that'll want to do the mowing for dad. But if not, spend the time. If you're mowing.
I have a house full of girls. They don't even want to touch that.
Well, yeah, I know several people in that same situation. But anyway, I would try to mow a little bit more often. I'd have your mower super sharp, and I think you're going to be just fine leaving those clippings down.
Well, one more question. I got two Monterey oaks in my front yard. It drives me just absolutely crazy the way they planted them, but because they're about 15 feet apart.
Mm-hmm.
Growing all crazy. I wanted to come to your seminar yesterday, but I was on my way to Llano, so
okay.
I didn't get to do that.
Yeah.
But they're both about 12 to 15 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be doing okay, but it's just they almost look like a bush.
Well,
and what do I do with that? I know nature's going to take over sooner or later, but
well, here's what you do. First of all, be sure the root flare is exposed. You've heard me talk about that a bunch of times, and that's very important with Monterey oak. And all those limbs that are down lower, that you don't want them down that low, but you don't want to, you know, take away all that foliage, because that's what's making the trunk grow more quickly in diameter. This time of year, I go through trees, young trees, when, and I still consider yours young trees, and all those lower limbs, I'm going to cut them back to about 6 inches long. I'm not going to let them turn into a lollipop. I'm not going to let those lower limbs make big growth, because ultimately I'm going to cut them off. But when I cut them 6 inches long, they're still going to have leaves up and down. We call it trashy trunk. That is the healthiest young tree you can have, is a tree that have leaves, has leaves all the way up and down the trunk, because every one of those leaves is a little sugar factory that's pumping good stuff back into the trunk to strengthen it and make it grow more quickly. Now, once those trunks get up to where they're 5-6 inches in diameter, then I'm going to cut those limbs all the way off. But I do this. I've got more cedar elms than I do Monterey oaks and some cypress. But I go through generally January, February. I've done part of it. I've still got some more to do. But I'll be going through with my hand shears and just clip, 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 clip. Probably takes me 3 minutes to do a tree. Uh-huh. And I'm just cutting all those limbs back. They're going to leaf out, and it's just going to be a green telephone pole out there supporting the top of the tree. That way you're maximizing the growth of your tree, but you're beginning to develop the overall shape you want that tree to have.
Well, what about one of them's growing pretty straight up. The other one's got, at the top of it, it's got a like a dog leg, and it's taken off in the wrong direction. It's like, well, what do I do with that?
Well, if you want to
offer, just leave it.
That one's
starting to bud. The other one, it's this one that I'm talking about with the dog leg on it. It's dropping its leaves right now, and it's starting to bud out.
Yeah, yeah. It's up to you. If you want to take that sprout, it's over time, it's going to develop more of an upright tree, but it's like, you know, kind of like a gangly kid and, you know, a gangly young lady for that matter. As they grow, they tend to get better looking, and your trees are going to be the same way. But if you want to get up there and give a little haircut, if it makes it look better, and if you can safely do it, you're not going to hurt the tree by doing that. And being a white oak, you don't have to paint the wound like you would if it were a live oak. But that's strictly up to you. That's strictly cosmetic.
All right. Thank you very much.
Check that root flare, though. That's really, really important. And that's
I have compost around it, and it's all the way down to the bottom.
Yep.
It's like I got it like kind of dug out right there at the trunk of the tree, and then the compost around the outside.
Well, that's good, but be sure you're down deep enough to actually see those big roots starting to see the trunk of the tree broaden out. There was a pecan tree not too terribly far from our nursery. They had to go down 6 feet to find the root flare on that tree. The builder had dumped so much soil in around it. So there's no way I can tell you dig out 1 inch, dig out 2 inches, dig out a foot. You got to go down to where you see that trunk starting to flare and see those big roots. You do that, you'll speed up the growth of the tree. The growth will be healthier, and the tree will assume a better shape on its own, I guess would be the best way to put it.
All righty. I thank you very much.
Good question, sir. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Now it's down to the bottom of the board, and that's Barbara. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I got a partial answer by listening to Jeff a few minutes ago, but we're buying a place in Lavernia, and it has beautiful tall trees, but nothing but sand and leaves underneath.
Okay.
And so I did initially have the grass question, but you said only St. Augustine in the shade and Bermuda in the sun. Is that correct?
That only St. Augustine in the shade is correct. In the sun, there are actually varieties of St. Augustine that will do well, such as Floritam, or Bermuda or Zoysia. Those will also do well in the sun. There are also some native grasses that don't have quite the manicurable look, but yes, you are overall right there.
Okay, you say there are some native grasses. Well, those will not do in the shade. They'll have to be in the sun. sun.
They'll have to be in the sun, and they're never going to give you a real neat manicured look. Everybody always says,
I don't care about that.
Okay, well, there is a great grass blend. You can buy it from Douglas King Seed. You can get a number of different places, but it is called Habiturf, H-E-B-I-T-U-R-F. Was developed up to the Wildflower Research Center in Austin. That's actually a blend of three good native grasses that you can certainly grow, but now it's not going to be super green. It's always going to look kind of like it needs a haircut. It's just not going to make that manicured look. I'm glad you don't demand that. I think for most areas it's okay to be a little shaggy. There are some good native grasses, and my choice of what is one of the best is that Habiturf blend, and several of your native seed companies will have that. I buy it from Douglas King.
Yeah, because we're going to have, almost 3 acres, I think, and we're not going to have grass on all of it. But the other bad news was that the folks that have the place that we're buying had goats. And there is probably not one single thing.
Oh, goats are very hard on the land. They're humorous to watch. But no, the Habiturf, they've used it like at the Bush Library up in Dallas. There are a lot of very well established places where you can see what a good job it's done, like, say, Wildflower Research Center up in Austin. I think it'd probably be a great choice for you, but check it out, Google it, look at what it looks like as a turf grass, and I think it's just the ideal choice. And
the other thing is we have lived in Rockport, and we're moving up to Lavernia. Now in the fall and the winter, we like to put down some winter rye seed. Can we use winter rye in the fall and winter just to get something in that sand
You absolutely can, but don't overdo it. If you are putting it on bare ground, I'm going to tell you to use a pound of rye per 100 square feet. But where you are overseeding any good grass, we're going to cut that down to 1 pound from every 250 square feet. It would be harmful to put it down so dense that it, was like a giant green carpet. You're just going to use it a little bit more lightly, and it's fine to overseed with.
Okay. If we chose to ground cover some places, I assume you can't walk on ground cover. And what ground cover would you suggest for that kind of sandy, real shady area?
Sure. You can walk on it, but you can't do it regularly. If you need to walk through it to, check something, you certainly can. If it's an area where you need to have a path, put down some stepping stones and then plant your ground cover around it. And Asiatic jasmine's probably going to be my number one choice.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that would work in the shade. I know it's
absolutely
well in the sun.
It'll be even happier in the shade than it is in the sun.
Okay.
And there are some beautiful new varieties. If you say, oh, that stuff's so common and ugly, go look at Snow in Summer, go look at Kaleidoscope, go look at there are a number of different variegated, some of them with a lot of pink in the leaves. If you don't want just that standard dark green of Asiatic jasmine, you do have some choices these days, so check it out.
Okay. Well, thank you.
It's my pleasure, Barbara.
Check out that Habiturf, too.
Do it. And let me know what you decide. We'll talk again. Thank you. All right. We're going to talk to Todd and Kay and Debbie. One line open. Grab it if you like. Good morning, Todd.
Morning, Bob.
Morning,
how
sir. Beautiful morning out there.
Oh, it's beautiful Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I need a recommendation. I had to pull out some Esperanza, the old traditional yellow ones, about 20 years old.
Right.
And they just had a mat of mess on the bottom. And instead of being a couple of three pretty trunks, I'd have 100 of them.
Right.
Up, and it was just time to get rid of them. I'd like to replace them with not necessarily another Esperanza, but I know there's some shorter varieties, but something that had a, maybe the same type of bell flowers that would attract the hummingbirds and butterflies and that type of stuff.
Well, it's hard to beat Esperanza as far as the long blooming season, as far as, and you're exactly right. There are a bunch of new dwarfer varieties. Most of them came out of a breeder called Mountain States Nursery. And they're actually, there is a more compact yellow. There is a compact yellow with a red throat. There is one that is almost red. There is one that is a coral orange. And these things, you know, they're going to max out at 5-6 feet. In some cases, maybe even a little bit slower or a little bit lower. So it's hard going to beat those as far as things that will look good. Now, there are some other plants. There's what they call a bush honeysuckle, or a Cape honeysuckle is what it's more commonly called. Also a tropical plant, makes a low mounding plant that blooms on and off through the summer and has those flowers that the hummingbirds absolutely love. There are vines like Tangerine Beauty Crossvine. They bloom heavily in the spring and then scatter some flowers through the summer. And hummingbirds love that tubular flower. There are some annual vines like Clock Vine and Cypress Vine. There's some good things that the hummers will love. Other bushier plants, woody plants, of course, the so-called Pride of Barbados. It's going to get pretty big, 5-6 feet. It's going to be perennial, and it doesn't really have a tubular flower, but I see hummingbirds around mine all the time, plus a lot of butterflies. There are a couple of different Cuffeas. This is a perennial plant. Common name is a cigar plant. The more compact varieties like David Verity are going to bloom all summer long. The big old-fashioned cigar plant is mainly fall blooming. But some of the smaller forms will give you flowers, you know, probably 8 months out of the year. Not a tubular flower, but shrimp plant is a perennial that's going to grow 2-2.5 feet tall. Hummingbirds absolutely love that. I can give you a long list of plants, but there are going to be very few things that give you as many flowers over as long a period of time, and I sure would check out some of the dwarf form of Esperanza since you've had and like that.
Great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Anything else I can help you with today?
No, sir. That's it. I appreciate it. Well, I'll look for some of the dwarf varieties.
Take a look at it. There are not a lot of them in the nurseries now. This is still the, 17th of February. It is not spring yet, but there will be plenty of them out there in the near future. And anyway, just call anytime I can help. And in the meantime, get out and have a good Sunday.
Thank you, Bob.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, Kay is up next. Good morning, Kay.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I have a couple different questions. In New Braunfels, Texas, I'm seeing a lot of big moundy bushes. Like they call them Florida or primrose jasmine.
Right.
Okay. Is the primrose jasmine the same as a Florida jasmine?
They are very similar. They are not exactly the same. Italian jasmine is another very similar one. Same yellow flowers, a little bit smaller leaf, but there are a bunch of different very similar ones. They are extremely fast growing. They are one of those plants that I love to say, give it an inch and it'll take a yard, your yard. What it does, and you've described it very well, it's a mounding plant with those limbs that arch out. Everywhere they touch the ground, they will take root, and then they will leapfrog another 2 or 3 feet out into the yard. So they do take some maintenance. You have to get in there. I have them in my yard, and I attack them with the pruning shears and a grubbing hoe because sometimes I don't prune them quite as often as I should, but they are hardy. They will grow as tall as what you lean them up against. If they were leaning against a 6-foot fence, they would be 8 feet tall. Left of their own devices are going to be 3, maybe 4 feet tall, where they just grow and kind of make a big expanding mound. But they are hardy. They are deer resistant. They are drought tolerant. Their only negative is that they will take over given the opportunity.
Okay, great. All right. And then where would I purchase something like that?
Any good nursery should have them. If they don't have them now, they definitely will have them in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, thank you very much.
One more thing.
My question is, I had picked up a bunch of private or Barbados seeds, and you recommended I call you back in February to ask you how to start those seeds.
Well, scarify them lightly. You're not going to be doing a huge number of them. If you had a big number, I would tell you to find somebody with a gym tumbler and put a little, you know, sharp sand, a little bit of carborundum in there and tumble the seeds. What you want to do is take a file, it could be a little triangular file, it could be a fingernail file, and just grab them one at a time and just make a nice, rough, hard rub across them. You don't actually have to make a visible line in them, but just scratch them good, because that's what's going to help them absorb water. And then give them about a 30-minute soak in water. You can add a little bit of seaweed if you want. You can add a little bit of Garrett juice. And then plant them in little pots. If you want the cheap and easy way to do it, get an old egg carton, punch a hole in the bottom of each one of those little cells, fill them with potting soil, and just poke one seed down into each one of those cells. Keep them bright, keep them warm. If you have a propagating mat, put them on that, on top of that, because they love that warm bottom soil. They'll sprout in about 2 or 3 weeks. And 6 weeks from now, you're going to have some beautiful little 6-inch tall plants that you can either move into bigger containers or plant them in the yard.
Ooh, that sounds wonderful. And where would I find a propagating mat?
Probably have to go online. My business partner gave me a big one. It's about 4 feet long and 2 feet wide. Most of them are going to be more like 12 by 18 inches. You're going to spend probably $20 to $30. They're kind of like an electric heating pad or a plastic heating pad. They're kind of like up north. I hear they use doormats that have heating cables in them to melt the snow and things. These things just generate a nice, relatively maybe 70 degrees. I mean, if you want to go all out, you can get one that actually has a thermostat and you can set the temperature you want. But for what you're doing, just any good old inexpensive propagating mat's going to do the job for you. Probably going to run you $20 to $30 and should last for years.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bob. I hope I have good luck with those.
Oh, I'm sure you will have good luck with them. And just if they get too big and bloom too much, don't call me and complain. I'm warning you what you're getting into. They're a big plant and they love to flower, and you'll never have to plant them again, because they will make seed pods. Those seed pods, when they explode, they will throw those seeds in my yard. They throw the seeds 10 feet up onto my porch. And first thing you know, you're going to have them coming up all over the place. So you're going to make a lot of hummingbirds happy in the process. So
I will never complain, I promise.
You have a great day, Kay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bob Webster, News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 1071.
All right, let's get back to gardening, and nothing's changed. Debbie's at the top of the list, then it's Javier and Frank and Bill. That's the wrong button to push. That's the one to push. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Bob, for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm on my way to riding the river in Van Buren. Beautiful drive on this Sunday morning.
You have fun.
I have a quick comment and a quick question. So the comment is, I was raised with four brothers, and somehow I was skipped over when I was tall enough to push the lawnmower.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's probably why now I cherish working out in the yard, because I, you know, was skipped over, and, you know, I think girls miss it if they don't at least get an
opportunity. I'm with you, a lady after my own heart. What's your question? We're a little short on time.
Okay, great. So I have a couple of weeds growing in my yard, and they're the ones with a single root, and they just suffocate the grass. How do I get rid of those?
Mow them down fairly low. Your grass has just not started growing yet. Weeds love the cooler weather. Your grasses, whether it's Bermuda, St. Augustine, or Zoysia, they're not going to start growing until the weather gets a little bit warmer. And the only thing you really need to do is keep those weeds mowed down. Sound like dandelions, possibly. But the grass is going to choke them out. It just is
okay,
not...
Good.
It's just a little later starting. The weather we've had and all the rain we've had, I've never seen as many green weeds as we have. But
no, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a great crop.
But it's just, if you have Bermuda grass, if you have a grass that is browned out and you wanted to spray, you could use your vinegar and orange oil, if you had Bermuda or Zoysia, and that would kill the green. But, you know, your lawnmower is all you need. Yeah, you're getting good organic material in the soil from the roots, and they're not really hurting a thing. So don't let anybody complain about the weeds. Just mow them off, and your grass will be back soon.
Okay, or I'll hand pull them just like my grandmother used to do for therapy.
And it's almost as good exercise as pushing that mower around.
It sure is. It sure is. Thank you, Bob, so much for taking my call and for what you do.
It's my pleasure, Debbie, and I appreciate the call.